Good morning, friends gathered together in the Dharma this morning. This month, most of you know that we're looking at the picture that's halfway through the cycle of 10 ox herding pictures that represents a stage of our spiritual journey called Taming of the Ox. Even though we've been reflecting on this picture for two Sundays now, we're learning that these pictures have many layers or facets of meaning, and we can revisit the pictures and verses and continue to uncover more insights. So before I share my reflections, I'm going to show the picture and verse again. And there it is. Can you screen share it? Thank you. So I'm going to ask you to let go of anything you might think you already know about this picture. And sit for a second with this expression of taming of the ox and take a fresh look and listen to the words and forget what you thought last time. So I'll read the verse. The whip and rope are necessary, else it might stray off down some dusty road. Being well trained, it becomes naturally gentle. Then unfettered, it obeys its master. In this moment, what is arising in your awareness? What visual details do you notice? What words seem important? Are you sensing any feeling or feelings from the picture or the words? A memory might be stimulated of your own experience of what you consider taming the ox. And if so, you might ask yourself, what does the ox represent for you in this moment? You'll have an opportunity later during the breakout discussions to share with others your understanding or how you're working with the pictures, and this picture in particular, in your practice. So, Jerry, you can remove the picture now. Thank you. And I'll start my talk. Tim has suggested that we ask ourselves what the ox is representing to us, and what it represents can change. I'm going to start with the ox representing the mind, because it's the mind that creates the world and the self. In the Rohitasa Sutta, it says, I think it's the Buddha speak. No, I don't know who's speaking, but anyway, in that sutta it says, it is just within this fathom-long body with its perception and intellect that I declare that there is the world, the origination of the world, the cessation of the world, and the path of practice leading to the cessation of the world. So if we want to find out what our true self is and connect with that, we have to understand the mind. And when I say the mind, I'm ultimately including the heart. So I'm talking about the heart mind or the citta in Pali. As Sharon Salzberg's and Joseph Goldstein's teacher Munindra said, if you want to understand the mind, sit down and observe it. This picture to me is about how we sit down and observe the mind. We need to show our mind that it can be mindful, and this takes right mindfulness and right effort. Right mindfulness is open to the way things are, bare knowing, not adding anything. But to be able to have such a mindful attitude goes against the stream of our conditioning. The survival of self, family, and cultures has depended on the development of rational, linear thinking, which helps us function in the world, helps us plan ahead, problem solve, communicate, and invent. But that thinking mind also separates me and other, me and you. It compares, it judges, it proliferates, and it's very distracted. What's the next best thing? How can I get rid of the last worst thing? It takes effort and discipline to not fight with this conditioning as we try to develop mindfulness. And this picture, in contrast to the previous picture of catching the ox, shows the response of the mind when it is well trained. The Buddha gave many talks on how to train the mind, the most notable one being the Satipatthana Sutta, or the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. At this stage, we work to try out and learn from the instructions on how to observe the physical body sensations, the feelings of pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral, how to observe the emotions and thoughts, how to see patterns of conditioning like the five hindrances and the five aggregates, and the Four Noble Truths, which help us see the pattern of our suffering and what to do about it. We can learn to see these in an impersonal way, which loosens the grip of the self. So this is part of the training that's going on in this picture that's helped bring the ox into greater harmony with the ox herder. We can look at these ox herding pictures in terms of a lifetime of our spiritual journey, and we can also look at them in terms of different moments in our practice. Moments that don't necessarily follow in the sequence 1 through 10. For example, we could have an experience of taming the ox followed by an experience of seeing the ox for the very first time, but in a different way. So we need to be open about relating to the pictures. If we look at taming the ox in terms of the development of our practice, we can see that compared to the previous picture, everything is more relaxed. The road is wide and clear. The ox herder is guiding, not grappling with the ox. And the two are moving ahead in a degree of harmony and trust. It's true that the whip and rope are necessary, the verse says, to keep the ox from going off in a habitual direction. But it might only stray off down some dusty road, and that doesn't sound like it would be too difficult to recover the ox if it did happen to stray, compared to trying to recapture it after it had charged into a high plateau or into an impenetrable ravine, which was the case in picture 4. So the dusty road doesn't seem that challenging. The job of the ox herder here seems more established and predictable, and therefore I'm inferring that he or she is feeling more confident. The dusty road makes me think of the sutta where the Buddha is questioning whether or not he should try to teach what he has learned during his enlightenment under the Bodhi tree. And a Brahmin tells him that there are those with little dust in their eyes who will be teachable. So in this experience of taming the ox, I'm thinking that there will be challenges, but we're gaining confidence and we can meet the challenges and continue ahead on a path toward a mind that can be calm and focused. A number of people in these weeks of studying this picture have had some strong responses to the words whip and rope in the context of our times and culture, it does feel cruel to use a whip to discipline the mind. I like the suggestion of the commentator that Susan shared in her talk 2 weeks ago, who said that, well, he suggested that we think of the whip as mindfulness and the rope as effort. Certainly, this picture focuses on taming or training, on discipline. And this is a time of learning what is involved in right effort. Our first attempts in the previous stage, when we captured the ox, seemed to express a desire to control the ox or mind. The ox is not used to being controlled, and the ox herder seems to be in a state of overwhelm at first because of his, her, or her failure to be able to control such a strong being. Now, in picture 5, the taming of the ox, there is a formal sitting practice and growth in understanding the mind by observation. Seeing, oh, this is the way it is right now. And when a pleasant feeling arises, seeing, wanting, I want more of this. Or when an unpleasant feeling arises, followed by the thought that this shouldn't be happening, seeing aversion. Aversion is happening. This too. Our founding teacher used to tell us, relax, observe, allow. It sounds simple, but habit is strong and we forget. I think Susan or Lindell mentioned that the Pali word for mindfulness is sati, and it means remembering. So this is part of the gentle training we do with our mind. Oops, you got lost, but you just remembered. Good for you. And back we go to the breath, or to hearing, or to some other touch point where the mind can settle and be still for a time. By returning many times and by making an effort not to judge ourselves when we forget, we gradually develop a continuity of mindfulness. The continuity of mindfulness depends on going beyond judgment, going beyond identification with our, quote, bad habits. We have to really see these habits, feel them, and understand their drawbacks in order to let go of them. And as the Buddha said in another sutta, even I myself, before my awakening, when I was still an unawakened bodhisattva, thought, renunciation is good, seclusion is good, but my heart didn't leap up at renunciation, didn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace. The thought occurred to me, what is the cause? What is the reason why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation, doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace? Then the thought occurred to me, I haven't seen the drawback of sensual pleasures. I haven't pursued that. I haven't understood the reward of renunciation. I haven't familiarized myself with it. That's why my heart doesn't leap up at renunciation, doesn't grow confident, steadfast, or firm, seeing it as peace. To tame the ox or the mind and cultivate mindfulness, we need to spend time with the drawbacks of the thinking mind. And sometimes this can feel like the crack of a whip, I think. It doesn't feel good to sit with the hindrances and other fetters like the ego, clinging, aversion, which keep us from clarity and stability. But it's only by penetrating layer by layer to the core that these strong habit patterns can be extinguished, and we can be convinced to let go of them. I think this picture shows that the mind, which has found reward in its conditioned patterns, now is starting to see a different kind of reward that comes from renunciation, which is peace, a deep peace. It's starting to see that going down this road leads to very sweet grass that has the taste of our true nature. The well-trained mind that is naturally gentle doesn't come easily, however, in our Western culture. We tend to be goal-oriented strivers, often equating our self-worth with our accomplishments, and we're prone to having an inner critic or inner tyrant talking to us inside our head. That wasn't good enough. You're not good enough. You need to try harder. The person sitting next to you in this meditation hall is much more still than you are. Most of us need the help from the Brahma Viharas to remember our innate goodness. There is loving kindness. There is compassion. There is joy. There is equanimity. When I used to hear Rodney's instructions to relax, observe, and allow, the allow part was hard. It was very helpful to be introduced to the words of the Brahma Viharas, words that could help me try a different approach to myself, even if I felt like I was only going through those words in the motions. May I be safe and protected. May I have ease of well-being. May I be happy. I learned that it was okay if I didn't feel those feelings in the moment. The Brahma Viharas were a practice of intention, not of feeling. And this practice was not about controlling the mind, but of gently inclining the mind in the direction of kindness, of compassion, of joy, and of equanimity. They say the Dharma practice is a practice of two balancing wings, compassion and wisdom. I think this picture and verse remind us of that. We cultivate wisdom when we investigate and understand what brings the true reward of peace, and when we understand what gets in the way of that peace. And we cultivate caring for ourselves and others, openness to joy and openness to equanimity when we soften our critical stance. And we are firm but gentle. The last thing I want to say about this picture is about its placement in the cycle of 10 pictures. It's only halfway, the fifth of 10. I'm going to play the devil's advocate for a moment. It looks pretty good to me. Sure, the whip and rope are necessary. The ox could stray, but not too far. I'd say there's a lot of ease and well-being in this picture. I could live with this. At least when I began this Dharma path, I would have been happy to stop here. In fact, this is where I was thinking it would lead, to some peace, some confidence, away from conflict. I started out in a moment of distress in my life, and this picture would have represented a lot of relief from that distress. Still, I know I was destined not to be able to stop at this picture, because even though I began the path in a pretty desperate place, I know that I still wanted more than relief. I began the search for the ox, which in the beginning of the cycle, it was like I was searching for the spiritual path. I didn't know quite what the spiritual path that would be right for me was. And then I started on this Dharma path, and an important thing I've learned since I found the Dharma path is that there's no end to seeing. The more I see, the more I see. And when I began, I knew when I was suffering with big things, but I didn't know about all the little sufferings. So many things I thought were making me happy had some suffering in them, which I refused to see, partly because I discounted impermanence. And there were many things about which I thought, if only, then I would be happy. Or if I could just get rid of this, I would be happy. Or if I could just be more this, I would be happy. So taming the ox, developing the right effort and right mindfulness, reaches a level of harmony and well-being. But that very mindfulness will see that more must be revealed. This is not a stopping place. I'm going to close with a poem. We've talked about the fact that these are Zen. These pictures come from the Zen tradition. And this poem is by a Zen practitioner. It's called Hokusai Says. It's about the painter, the Japanese painter Hokusai, the one who painted the big wave, the great wave that I'm sure many of you have seen. But I think it's appropriate for this cycle. And this is the poem. Hokusai says, look carefully. He says, pay attention, notice. He says, keep looking, stay curious. He says, there is no end to seeing. He says, look forward to getting old. He says, keep changing. You just get more who you really are. He says, get stuck. Accept it. Repeat it. Repeat yourself as long as it is interesting. He says, keep doing what you love. He says, keep praying. He says, every one of us is a child. Every one of us is ancient. Every one of us has a body. He says, every one of us is frightened. He says, every one of us has to find a way to live with fear. He says, everything is alive. Shells, buildings, people, fish, mountains, trees, wood is alive. Water is alive. Everything has its own life. Everything lives inside us. He says, live with the world inside you. He says, it doesn't matter if you draw or write books. It doesn't matter if you saw wood or catch fish. It doesn't matter if you sit at home and stare at the ants on your veranda or the shadows of the trees and grasses in your garden. It matters that you care. It matters that you feel. It matters that you notice. It matters that life lives through you. Joy is life living through you. Satisfaction and strength is life living through you. He says, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Love. Feel. Let life take you by the hand. Let life live through you. So we'll just sit for a moment. Thank you for being here today, for receiving my words. And now it's time for the breakout rooms. Okay, welcome back, everybody. Anyone like to share what you shared in your rooms? I don't know if you saw, I had some prompts which I sent into the breakout rooms. I don't know if you saw them. And then I spent about 5 minutes trying to copy them into the chat. So you'll see in the chat, there's like six copies of the, because I didn't realize I had it had worked. Anyway, you can talk about whatever you've comes up. I hope you can unmute yourselves. Ah, somebody wants to share. Wendell, unmute yourself.
Yeah, well, I wanted to just start out first, Lauren, by thanking you for your talk. That was such a wonderful talk. I really love that. And like what you were saying about how when we discovering a new path that leads to sweet grass.
I thought maybe I was going overboard there.
No,
But I
that
thought.
was really great. That was really great. But it was a really nice sort of description of the process of devoting time to practice and the joy of learning how to observe and understand the mind and all, and also the need for compassion and the challenges. So I really appreciated it. It was a really good talk, and I think we had a nice conversation about some of those same issues, the need for kindness to ourselves and the need for discipline and the need to have a wide lens for the different things that our minds can do as we go through the journey. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, Steve.
I want to thank you also for the talk, and I really appreciated, well, I really, really liked the poem. And I really liked kind of grounding it in the devil's advocate of like, well, maybe this is good enough. This is the middle picture and what we can get from here and realizing that there is ease and sometimes and that there's still more. And I just really liked that you the way that you reminded where we are in this and what this picture represents. So thank you for that. And we talked about that in our group too, that when you can find some relief or ease, or it's a little coy or a little it's not, it's sort of there's still more to understand.
Yeah, I don't usually look ahead in the pictures, but I've started deciding that I kind of need to do that, and it's helpful to do that. So I decided to do that this time. Yeah. Tiwari always says, or has said to us, there's always a challenge in each picture. So I was trying to think, well, what was the challenge in this picture? And I was trying to think of, so I was trying to think more in the whole cycle of things, which I haven't done before particularly, but I think I'm going to start doing that from now on. Go ahead, Jerry.
I pretty much echo what Steve just said. I like the poem. That was a really nice poem, and I'll have to look at it again. And then, yeah, it's like that's good enough. I think a good number of years in my practice, it was, oh, that's good. All right. I'll meditate once in a while, and if I'm kind of really off base here, I'll go on a retreat. Okay, back on track. So yeah, there's just seems to be more time, more of recognizing the value of continuity and not casually saying, okay, that's good enough. So appreciate you saying that.
Anybody else have anything that's coming up for them that they could share with the rest of us? Jean, go ahead.
Well, I really appreciated the talk this morning. I got a phone call just before this session started today from my adult son who presented me with a problem and he's quite capable of resolving the thing himself, but being the parent, I'm immediately sucked in. I'm underwater. I was torpedoed and I'm underwater. So when Jerry was saying if you find your mind wandering, and I just wanted to, how do you slow down from the speed of light? How do you slow this mind down? I mean, not just to return to mindfulness or to the moment, but with, holy cow. And I really appreciated, Lauren, the reminder that of the phrase, this is the way things are now, because that's the way things are. I have gained a measure of calmness from your talk and from the small group. So I'm feeling much more positive about the situation. And it just points, once again for me, to the value of the three gems, of the teachings of Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. So it has been good to be here, and it was good to hear your talk and be reminded of some things. And so my mind is not quite at the speed of light right now. It's somewhat slower. That wouldn't surprise some of you, but I thank you deeply for it.
I thank you for sharing that, and I think probably others in our Sangha this morning do too, to remind us that, you know, life just keeps showing up, and we can really, you know, we can be in a lot of turmoil, and it can be hard to get untangle that. And, but I think those of us here know that we have faith that we can do it eventually and not to give up when it gets all messy. So thank you for reminding us about that way life is.
Yeah, if I could add to that, if I could, you know, add to that.
Is yes.
You had that question, Dean, of how do I get this, my mind to slow down? That's kind of the delusion we have, that I can make my mind do this. And I think this is whole practice. Uh-huh. It's a lot to do with letting go of that notion, that letting go of a self being able to control. I mean, otherwise, why don't we just say, I'm going to be happy. Never have it. Now I'm going to be sad. We never choose that one. So it's allowing it to, settle, as opposed to I'm going to make it happen. So it's, you know, you said the word, and Lauren as well, it's like this now. Just having patience with it.
Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you.
For bringing that up, the controlling, that's often what we, our first response is, how can I get rid of this? How can I fix this? So you're right, we can't do that. But our thinking mind thinks we can, but that's what we're learning. So it's great. Thank you so much, everybody, for sharing.